What is going on out there, everybody? And thanks again so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And I'm never in here alone. I can't do it alone. I have to have me amigo. I guess the Frank to my beans, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here at Skeleton Studios. Feeling like Levi Morgan this morning. I got these new limbs. Got these new limbs for this Hoyt riser, and I'm telling you.
You realize that there's literally like five people listening that know who Levi Morgan is.
Well, you should educate yourself.
He's one of the best archers ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got these new limbs ready because deer season's coming to an end, and you've talked me into trying some traditional 3D archery, which I have not done since like 1999, 2000, 2001.
I think it was before that. I think I got you out there in the late 90s.
But that was always with a compound bow.
Yeah,
so I've never attempted bare bow 3D archery. So, you know, I thought, well, why not give it a go, right?
Hey, you can't be any worse, right? That's the way I feel. I can't be any worse.
Can't hurt you. And now because of the popularity of disc golf, the courses are filling up. I don't like it. So now I'm going
to
try something different.
Hats off to Simon Lazat for his big deal that he just signed.
Yep, MVP. Mm-hmm. I got to get you to try some of those. They really are pretty nice.
I'm going to try them. Yeah, I'm going to have to mess around with them and see. I've never thrown one.
I've only got a couple. Like, I've got a Reactor, I think it is. I have a Tesla, and there's another one.
Another craziest.
They got crazy names, but...
Folks, this is the perfect time to tell you, and the perfect example to make is if y'all have something you enjoy doing, don't be afraid to go try it. And here's why I'm saying, look, me and Kyle play a lot of disc golf. We're terrible, all right? And a couple of years ago, we signed up for a tournament to go play in it. We didn't know how big it was, but we were going to go play in a tournament. And they was like 35 people or something in our group when it was in our bracket or whatever it was in our division, right? Out of the 35 people, I came in 34th and I only beat one dude by like two strokes. And that's the dude sitting next to me.
That's right.
So listen, don't feel bad. If you want to do it, do it. We don't care.
Yeah, go for it. Who
cares? Just go for it. Who cares? We out there, we got our butts kicked. Whoever was out there, their feet were tired from kicking our butt. But... we still went and did it. Don't be afraid to fall down.
If you have a bad round, look, at the end of the day, you still got to walking around a park all day.
Exactly.
Right?
With all your friends.
Yeah, that's the best part of playing, is goofing on one another, right?
Yeah.
I'm not looking to be on the tour.
That's what makes it so great about 3D.
Same thing, yeah.
Is when you miss and all. And it's more fun like when you gamble, like, okay, if you miss this shot, you got to eat a can of cat food or something like that, right? That's the way we used to gamble. We don't do that anymore, but...
I like to have things to tinker with, right? So this is just another excuse for me to have more things to tinker with. You got to build arrows. You got to cut them.
Yep.
Glue the veins or the feathers on. You twist in your brace heights. I was mentioning to you the other day, I'm going to mess with my tiller some. You know, it's just an excuse to do something. So like Cam said, if you have a hobby you want to try, don't be afraid. Go for it. Life's short.
And fail, I will tell you this.
You're supposed to fail. You're never going to be good at anything when you start out.
Everybody always asks, no matter what, and I'm notorious for it. And if you're going to go like, man, hey, you think everybody's going to be cool about it? Like, I've never done it. I'm going to show up. Will people be cool about it? I'll tell you, this is what I've learned through all my years on this planet, which is only 47 of them, is this. In every group, there's good people, and in every group, there's asses. It's just the way it works. But I'll tell you that most of the time, people are really cool. And everything that I've tried to be brand new at, I've always had people that were really cool about it to just welcome us in. So that's it. If you want to get into disc golf, there's plenty of people there to welcome you. Archery, same thing, anything. Just go out and give it a try. Life's too short not to mess around.
Well, that's a really good point because no matter what hobby you're participating in, I've never been in a situation where people like a newcomer. Like, oh, this is a new guy. He wants to learn how to do what we're doing. And then everybody wants to come
together
and help
you. They want to show what they know.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's the best.
Dude, I'm glad you're here. Every time you introduce someone to archery or disc golf, it's awesome. It's like, I'm glad to see someone is trying to learn something new.
Yeah.
I'm no expert. I'll share with you what I know. Right? You might try this out.
This is why I wish I could live to be like 1,000 years old.
Man,
imagine how good you would be at archery after 1,000 years of doing it.
Good at anything.
Yeah.
I like learning new things, right?
Yeah.
That's
learning,
my favorite.
Learning is my hobby.
My other favorite is crazy stories of lizard-like humanoids.
Well, it just so happens I got one. You're going to like it. And just so happens, it comes from Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
First of all, look, hearts, sadness goes out. Lisa Marie Presley passed away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Lisa Marie is no longer with us. And, dude, I used to have a crush on her, man, when I was younger. Just always thought Lisa Marie was hot.
I didn't know she passed away.
Yep, just this passed is news away. To me. Yep, yeah. Just passed away just recently. So here we go, like in the last couple of days. Listen to this. Now, again, Kyle and I have talked about it last show. We've talked about it on the Elite Show. Don't forget, we're coming up. We're going to be on YouTube with Lon and Phantoms and Monsters. We think it's going to be a live stream.
I believe it's on the 18th.
Yeah, we're going to find out for sure. We'll go ahead and let you know. We'll keep it posted, the whole thing. You know, watch Instagram and all that. We'll make sure to put it out there. But if it's live, and I think it is, you'll be able to get in the chat. You'll be able to ask questions, talk about stuff, spur stuff, get things going like that. Lon fired this because he knows how much we like the madness, and this is what he got. And I'm going to tell y'all, this incident occurred in Memphis, Tennessee. I started my career as a Memphis police officer a few years previous in the 1980s. I was on a special assignment at the time. It was 2 a.m. and it was a clear summer night, but quite humid. I was in my personal vehicle with the top down and the radio playing. I was still in uniform, including my bulletproof vest and a gun belt, with all the regular equipment attached to it. I was headed south on Covington Pike at a good rate of speed and was the only one on the road. Now, this part of the road connects to the Raleigh-Bartlett area and then to the Berclair area. The road's slightly elevated as the surrounding area is low, and running through it is the Wolf River, which is a few miles from here and connects to the Mississippi. This area is commonly referred to by the locals as the Wolf River Bottoms these days. As I was driving in my peripheral vision over to my right, just outside of my headlight beams, I noticed something. It was moving fast and directly towards the front of my car. Well, I immediately slammed on the brakes, thinking that a deer was running across the road. But I couldn't have been more wrong. It came to a screeching halt right in the middle of the road in front of my headlights, not more than 7 foot from my bumper. Now, as we both froze in place staring at each other for several seconds, it appeared to be 3 to 4 foot tall, but it was also crouched. It could have been closer to 5 if it stood up straight, but I got the impression that its current body posture was its normal way of standing. It had a large head, at least compared to its skinny, slender body. It appeared to be dark gray and greenish in color, similar to the color of an alligator, but the appearance of its skin looked like a similar texture to a human's. Now, it had dark, large oval eyes on each side of the upper part of its face, running slanted from the top portion of its head to about the midsection of its head. It was kind of pointing inward to where you'd expect to see a nose. However, from what I could tell, there was no distinct nose, at least none like a human. Below the eyes was a very thin, dark, almost black line, which I assumed was its mouth. Now, it ran from about the same location a human's mouth would be. However, the line ran straight across the lower face in front and then turned upward and slightly back on the head. It had no ears that I could see. Its body and chest area were rounded like a human, but vastly smaller, almost like a child's. Its arms appeared to be longer and somewhat disproportionate to its body, and they were skinny, and they had insect-type look to them. I could make out hands, but they were also completely folded at the wrist joint. Its legs were long because, even with this thing's shortness, I could make out the top of them, even with it so close to the bumper, which was obscuring the bottom half somewhat. They were like the arms, thin and insect-like, but appeared to be jointed. I didn't notice its chest area moving, or I did, rather, notice moving slightly like it was breathing, but it seemed slow and steady. I never noticed anything like genitalia. There was no hair any place that I could see, and I'm not even sure if it was wearing any type of clothing.
Just so you know, he mispronounced that on purpose. Go ahead, continue. It's a new year. Maybe there's some new people.
If it was, it would have had to be skin tight. Skin tight genitalia. And I've never noticed a tail at any point. Now, my adrenaline was pumping, and it was only a brief period of observation. It again took off like a shot, and then it was out of my headlights. I could still make out the outline in the darkness, and it was moving like a sprinter. It leaped over the guardrail, onto the other side of the road, and then down the embankment. Now, I'll admit, this was not the only bizarre incident that I had during my career, but it was definitely the strangest. I've never told anyone on the force about this encounter. In fact, I only mentioned it to a close friend during these many years. I can only identify it as a lizard man or an unknown humanoid. I would have never believed it unless I actually witnessed it. And then they want to be anonymous, of course, I'm sure they're.
Wow. Yeah, what the heck?
Right, so you see a 5-foot-tall lizard, extremely long legs, but it sounds almost more like a crawler, but it's like a half lizard. I don't know. It's something. So here's my thing. Anytime we get stories like this, you know, we weren't there. We've always said, I can't cast any kind of judgment on them. We weren't there. We have no idea what it could have been. There's only two answers, again, to this kind of stuff. Either they saw exactly what they are claiming to see, or they're a liar. There's no misidentification of any of this. This is the way it is. And I firmly believe that there is some weird things that may pop up from time to time that we've just now kind of stumbling across.
Yeah, that sounds horrible.
It could be one-offs.
Sure. Right?
That's what a lot of these things feel like. A lot of these encounters feel like one-offs. That's why we can't study them. We can't explain them. We can't anything. It's just like, boom, it happened one time and that was it.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Pretty wild. Speaking of wild, check this out, Cam. It says, we were having a family friends get together to celebrate a birthday. Now, during the celebration, two of my nephews and a niece came tearing into the house, screaming at the top of their lungs, saying that a plane just crashed in one of the adjacent pastures. My brother, myself, and about three others walked outside to see what was causing all the ruckus. We didn't see anything out of the ordinary except a strange burning smell that smelled like burning mesquite. We didn't think anything of it since it was kind of nippy and someone could have been burning some wood in their fireplaces. We told them to show us where they saw this airplane go down, and we walked over to the place and they showed us. The first thing we noticed was that all the dogs in the area were going bonkers. They were barking up a storm. Like they were all seeing the same thing. The area we live in is pretty much a rural community, unless you live in the city of Monahans, Texas. Many of the houses are set on large plots of land, usually between 4 and 5 acres per house. Although we can see the houses of many of our neighbors, and we do have traffic on the road, you don't get the feeling of being all to yourself. Or you do, I'm sorry, you get the feeling of being all to yourself out there. Some of the land by our house is overrun by wild mesquite trees. Only a small portion of the land surrounding the house is cultivated and cleared out. Beyond the stand of trees runs a small barbed wire fence that separates us from our neighbor's land, who I could see were home because of the lights on in their house. Now, we walked around the edge of the trees, not wanting to really go into the stand of trees at night. Even though it's technically winter, there could be rattlesnakes seeking shelter in amongst the trees. Not to mention that mesquite trees have some wicked sharp thorns that protrude from them. They are razor sharp and quite capable of punching through a pair of jeans or boots easily, and they hurt like hell to get out. As we looked around, we started noticing a sort of electrical charge in the very air around us. Almost like the kind you feel when you approach a large electrical substation or charged an active radio antenna. As we made our way around the trees, one of my brothers noticed some light peeking through the trees. I told him it was probably one of the neighbors leaving or coming home. He promptly told me that it couldn't be headlights because the light seemed too diffused and not as concentrated as a car's headlight. We moved around as we cleared the stand of trees. We were shocked to see an oval-shaped object hovering, maybe 4 to 5 feet off of the ground. We stood there in total shock and awe. I can only imagine that our jaws were probably on the ground. As we stood there, watching this object hover there, without a sound, mind you, I took note that the object was maybe 30 to 40 feet from the front to the back. It was maybe the same dimensions around. The object seemed to be of a highly polished material that reflected the area around it. The reflection of the distant streetlights from the surrounding neighbors' properties seemed to reflect off of the surface of this object. There were also a small dull glow to the object, just barely noticeable, unless you were really looking. Almost like an aura of sorts. An iridescent blue of sorts. As we stood there in total shock, my brother next to me expressing his disbelief, we saw two strange-looking men appear from around the object. They at first didn't notice us. They were busy running around and gathering objects off of the ground and from the local trees. They didn't seem to notice us at all. They looked to be about the size of my oldest nephew, who is only about 4 foot tall. But they looked very skinny, like they had no meat on their bones. Their heads were large, and their arms were long, skinny, and hung down around their knees. About this time, my two nephews came walking up behind us, actually scared the hell out of us. They saw the object and the strange men, and in a voice that only a kid can project, they screamed out aloud, "What are those things?" That's when the creatures turned and noticed us. The sight of these creatures was something that will haunt me to the day I die. It turned and looked right at us. Its eyes were large, almost like the eyes of a praying mantis, except they were jet black and wrapped around its head. The two creatures looked at us for about 7 seconds, not an ounce of movement, before they calmly walked around the craft, one right after the other. They disappeared behind the craft and we never saw them again. A few seconds later, the craft began to lift up. Not a sound, mind you, coming from the object. No rush of wind, not even a swaying of the nearby branches of the mesquite trees. It rose quietly and hovered about 40 feet away off of the ground, and then it shot out like a bat out of hell. As it zoomed away, it started glowing and made it easier to track as it zoomed away, getting higher and higher till it finally just faded away. We just stood there in complete silence as we tried to make heads or tails of what the heck we just saw. My brother finally piped up and said, "Should we call the police?" After which, I burst out in laughter and replied to him, "And tell them what exactly?" My nephew looked like he had just seen the devil himself, which considering what we just saw, I don't blame him. He didn't want to talk about it, and after we made our way back to the house, he still didn't talk about it. I tried to ask him about it several days later, and he basically told me that he didn't want to think about it. He was still processing what he had seen. I was way more happy to leave it at that. I never really believed in the subject of UFOs or aliens, but after the events of that night, I'm seriously going to reevaluate that belief. I know that I plan to keep my mind open and start looking up towards the sky a little bit more from now on. Thanks, guys. Janet. So, wow. Monahans, wow. Texas. We've driven through Monahans.
Yeah, I've been there a few times. Yeah, there's, it's you know what? Rural. If anything would land at, it would be a perfect place to be.
Yeah, and the description of it being highly polished reminds me of that old Disney movie, Flight of the Navigator. Remember how shiny that thing was? And then the slight iridescent blue aura.
I do enjoy the heck out of that movie.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember liking it as a kid. So maybe it holds up. I might have to check that out. But the blue aura, you know, Bob Lazar talked about the blue aura. So several of these things in this sighting actually reflect other eyewitness accounts of these objects. And then to see them, you know, scurrying around, collecting things off the ground. And, of course, the kids ruined it by screaming. But what would you think? I mean, if you saw something like that.
I don't even know if I would react to something like that as far as I think I'd be in shock.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I think it'd be an overload. You know, we've talked about it before, and it's easy to say what you would do, but you don't know. Like, I don't know how when all your input sensors are overwhelmed, I'm not sure what it would be. It's kind of like when you're in a car accident or anything, those stressful situations. You're not really sure until it's over. And then you're like, man, I should have done this different. All these things you could have done different. I don't know how you could train for that, which is the reason you people train for things. How would you train for seeing something like that?
I don't know.
It's because it changes everything.
Yeah, because now you know for real that there's aliens coming here. Yeah.
The aliens.
In your field.
Yeah, hanging out by your place.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not down with all that. But I tell you what I am down with. Out-of-place artifacts and possible fae artifacts and just all around crazy, weird, strange items that have been left here that we've fumbled across and still don't have a lot of answers for. So let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll dig into that, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We'll be right back. let's dive in, Mr. Filson.
Okay.
Out of all the stuff, with, let's say, ancient history, we're going to start right there with some cool out-of-place artifacts. My favorite would have to be the Piri Reis map. I'm a junkie for those old maps, and it's simply because I feel like it is a direct tie to our pre-civilization, pre-flood civilization, to all of this. I believe it's all there, and it's. I think there's a. Of course, it's been a long time. 12,000 years is a long time.
Yeah. Right?
That's a long, long time. So I think these things have been, like we've talked about, stuff has been destroyed, things like that. So when it's left behind and we find this evidence, it's funny because people put up resistance.
Yeah. And for those that don't know what the Piri Reis map is, why don't you fill them in on exactly what document you're talking about?
So the Piri Reis map, as I'm talking about, is Piri Reis was a commander in the Ottoman Turk Empire and was also a cartographer and drew a map. And I believe it was found in 1908 in Constantinople, written on gazelle skin, rolled up and tucked away. And they put it out. They studied it in this whole thing. But nobody really thought much of it until the 1960s, because they realized as they were looking over it that it showed Antarctica free of ice.
Yeah.
The entire coastline free of ice, which isn't a big shock. But the fact is that this was accurately actually documented. And it wasn't until, I believe, the 1950s that the British government had sent a seismographic crew up there to do seismographic studies of the ice in Antarctica. And that's when they had first mapped the coastline. And it was almost near exactly to what came off the Piri Reis map. And the Piri Reis map was from the 1500s, which we've never seen Antarctica in modern history without ice on it. And then so the history of that map goes back into he had spoken about borrowing
Older maps,
other maps.
Making copies.
And all of those maps were in the Library of Alexandria. That's right. Where all that stuff had come from. So that's where all of that had been. And so basically what it's showing is that we had an accurate representation of a seafaring culture prior to the thawing of the last ice age.
And still, experts will refute that it's a fake map. It's like, how can you?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. Now, Piri Reis didn't live a long time. I think he lived about 30 years and the Turks cut his head off because I'm sure he made a mistake. But that's, you know, that was like the nature of the beast back then. You make mistakes, that's what happens. But that was one of my favorite, if not my all-time favorite,
right,
out-of-place artifacts that show all these things. Another one that always pops up that you and I have talked about for years is the Rock Wall in Rockwall, Texas.
The Rock Wall, the London Hammer.
Yes.
The aluminum wedge of Ayud.
But the one, the Rock Wall is crazy. You look into it. There's so many things. What about the Baghdad Battery? You've always brought that stuff up.
Yeah.
Or like the idea of the fact that there might have been like the carvings, the high relief carvings in the pyramid that show what looks like light bulbs.
Exactly.
Right?
Like,
I don't
know. Like, how would they know?
What could that possibly be?
Or, hieroglyphs depicting corn. Well, corn isn't native to Africa. Corn's a North and South American plant. So they know that it had to be some type of trade. The Egyptians had it in their hieroglyphics, right?
Had to have.
The traces of, like we had John Anthony West on, the traces of cocaine in some of the pharaohs.
Yes.
Which is also a product of, you know, Colombia. How did the pharaohs not only have possession of cocaine, but they knew what to use it for. And there's a lot of things. Maybe they weren't partying with it. Maybe they were using it for, you know, anesthesia, for surgery.
We should go check out the London Hammer. It's not far from here.
I told you.
I'm saying we're going to do it. You know, you got the in on it.
I know a guy whose son used to play baseball with Jacob, who is like their family members with the family that owns it. And he's like, you call me anytime. I can get you. You can touch it. Anything you want.
Yeah, we need to go check that out.
So,
but see, that's just another one of those out of place artifacts. The same, right? Just like what here, like I'm showing you here, the stone balls of Costa Rica.
I remember that. Yep.
Nobody did y'all see them when y'all were down there?
No, I remember you covering that years ago.
It makes no sense.
Perfect spheres.
Folks, this in the 1930s, there was the United Fruit Company, and they were down there in Central America, and they were looking for banana plantations. They were trying to start new ones down there. So while they're buying land, they're clearing land, okay? And they're working their way through it down there in Costa Rica. And a bunch of workers, as they're clearing land, come across these spheres, these rock spheres, some big, you know, some a few centimeters up to 2 meters in diameter. And they started finding several of them. Some of them, and this is there's recorded areas down there that said that some of these spheres that they found weighed around 16 tons.
Yeah.
16-ton perfectly round balls, okay, that are just out in the middle of of the jungles where they're working. Here's what's wild. The closest site to bring the material that those spheres were made out of were 50 miles away.
Yeah. Right.
So whatever it was that were making them, they brought them there, and they still don't know why. Have another one of these out of place artifacts that get left behind. Another one from down there in Central America took place in the 1950s. It was part of, I believe it was in Guatemala is where it actually started, where the Olmecs, that's where they started finding all the history of the Olmecs. And if you haven't looked into that, check out the Olmecs. It is a great stories of all their history as well. But this is, Dr. Oscar Padilla went down there looking for it in the 1980s, and it's a giant head, and you can find pictures of it, and it doesn't look anything like the Olmec carvings. This looks completely different. So this is a giant stone head in Olmec area, in where the Olmecs would be, and they found it, I believe, in the 50s when they found this stone head. So they don't even know how long this one was there. This predates the Olmecs. The problem was that a bunch of the dudes down there in the military used it for like shooting their guns. The rebels down in there were just shooting guns and all kinds of stuff at it and ended up destroying it because it didn't mean anything to them, right? It's just a big rock face. Now you start talking about out-of-place artifacts. Again, we bring up the one that Giorgio Tsoukalos always wears.
Oh, remember that one? The Delta Winged thing, right?
It's the little flying thing that looks like some sort of ship. Which is like
it looks like a space shuttle
from Inca. Yeah, it's Incan history. It's an Incan spacecraft.
How does it
basically.
Go? Was it when it goes by culture? So the Mayans were the most recent. Then it was the Aztecs. Then the Incans. Then the Olmecs.
I believe that's how it goes.
Mayans is the I think it's Mayan, Aztec, Inca Olmec. I believe
Egyptian.
So. Yeah,
as it kind of works its way down, that in Central and South America, I believe that's right. I believe that's right. Now here's another one that we covered. I did a while back, and then you bringing up the London Hammer and us talking about this, is that bit of what looked like gears out of like off of the teeth off of a gear that was found in coal in Russia in 2013.
I remember that.
Remember that stuff there? And here's the really wild thing. The coal deposit that they pulled this part of what looks like a broken off teeth out of a gear was 300 million year old coal.
Yeah.
So right. what's going on with that, right? Like that, like we'd said before, that makes no sense. Yet that's still part of it. So the Baghdad Battery talked about again, 1930s in the where was it in Iraq? In Baghdad is where they found this thing here, and the researchers tried to look through it to see what it could do, and they said likely this vessel, which is pretty cool. It is a cylinder. Each pot contained a cylinder of copper and an iron rod inside of that. They believe the pots were used, of course, to make all this somewhat electricity that they could, filled with, they believe, vinegar is what they actually filled it with. Some say grape juice.
Orange juice, I've heard. Yeah, anything acidic, right?
Acidic. That's why I believe they were going a lot with the vinegar. Now, it doesn't hold a lot of it, but it does like that there. Also, there's an argument that they think that they were using it for like electroplating, gold plating.
I've heard
jewelry
that,
making, you know, and all that stuff. Because they were advanced enough that they'd done a lot of that.
Well, they had to be advanced. I mean, they even conceptualized the thought of a battery, right? Somebody, whether it's the Viracocha, somebody.
Yeah, how would you figure that out?
Now, I don't like it whenever they talk about this stuff that it's instantly extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. Like, I love Ancient Aliens, the television show, but my problem is everything they suggest is aliens. It's like, why do we always have to go there? Like, why couldn't it just been man that was just really advanced, and then, you know, because of some cataclysm, we was wiped out and we lost the technology.
Just like it is now.
Yeah.
Certain people have more ingenuity than others, and they come up with stuff like that. Don't look at me. If you're looking at me to try to save y'all from a cataclysm, y'all in trouble.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, why is it always aliens, you know?
So let me show you
this
picture.
That. Yeah. Let me look here.
This is William's Enigmalith.
I'm not familiar with this.
Okay. So this right here took place. So in 1998, a fellow named John Williams was out. He was here in the States. He's walking around, and he comes across a rock in the middle of this trail. And he notices it because he says something is protruding from the rock. Well, doesn't that look like three prongs you'd plug in a wall?
It does.
Now, what's kind of unique to me is the fact that it looks like it's round. Each of the plugs is round. The prongs, rather, are round. But what it looks like is a three-pronged electrical plug, the male end of it, the three prongs sticking out. It looks like that it has actually been stuck into a rock. So not plugged into the rock, but where you could plug the rock into a wall socket. That's what it looks like. Now, according to Mr. Williams, people have examined it. They's like, look, whatever this is the way it was made. Whatever this isn't faked, any of this. He says that he stands beside the fact that it's either an advanced civilization or, like you just said, alien civilization. Mm-hmm. Now, he keeps tossing up the rock saying, y'all can take it and test it all you want to, but it can't be damaged. Don't damage this thing. Now, here's what's wild. You can, you know, the whole deal. So I don't know if they're going to end up breaking into it, how they're going to do it. But if you check that out, it's very odd. To me, I don't know how to feel about it, right? It looks, it doesn't look like it was.
You think it's something that looks like some a plug that we use today. So that's a, but it's nothing more than a rock.
It, yeah. Or it's, man, it just, I don't know. I don't understand what the use would be for a plug in a rock. Like I'm trying to break it down to where, why would you have an electrical plug in a rock no matter where you're from unless that rock plugs into the wall and you keep your lizard warm on it?
Remember the pet rock was popular.
Yes.
Like in the
oh yes
late 70s, early 80s.
Heck yeah.
And that guy sold like millions of dollars worth, but it only lasted like one summer. Like the summer of the fidget spinners.
Yes.
Remember how like everybody in America had one?
Yep.
And there was all kinds of these pyramid schemes, you know, where you could invest in these fidget spinning
companies. Yeah, I forgot all about the doggone fidget spinners.
There was a, when it comes to things from the past that should have been, I don't remember where they were. There's a certain, it looked like a system of pipes that were inside of like a mountain.
Yep.
And they were like petrified, preserved, like steam pipes, but from, oh God, I don't know. 500,000 years ago, and people were like, look, there's these, there's this piping network of like steam pipes inside of this mountain. Now, how did they get here?
You're talking about Mount Bayong in China.
Okay.
There are 150,000-year-old pipes.
Okay, so I,
yeah.
off, I'm yeah. wrong with the date, but I and I didn't remember where that was at, but you know what I'm talking about.
That's the Beijing Institute of Geology is who actually did the tests on those to find out. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And when you look at the pictures, I mean, it does. It looks like pipes.
So what ended up happening was they analyzed them and at a local smelt right there. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they said 8% of that, the material that those pipes were made out of could not be identified. They weren't really sure what it was. Then another researcher there from the Chinese Earthquake Administration and back in 2007 said that they'd run some tests on them and found that part of them were radioactive. Now they believe it's iron rich magma that is bubbled up that bring all that stuff up to the top and then it turns into tubes. But they're not 100% sure.
Like maybe they're like radioactive cores from something.
Yeah, like that's what they're saying is like, look, this could be natural. Then it also, we're not really sure. But don't forget, you and I laughed about this too. In the Gabon Republic over there in Africa is where they found what they thought was that nuclear reactor inside the mountain.
Yeah, and I've heard the same thing with the actual pyramids themselves.
Yeah.
People claim could have been used for some kind of nuclear reactor.
Well, they were saying that this nuclear reactor was like over a billion years old.
Yeah.
And that it operated for like 500,000 years or something. Which, I mean, who knows? With the way the world was built, maybe it just appears that way. The tests make it look that way. The whole thing. I don't know. Like, I mean, that was a long time ago. Right? Like,
yeah, but like,
shocker.
There's all kinds of signs of an advanced civilization
yes.
from long ago, you know?
Yes.
And it's not just speculation. There's lots of signs of, oh, what's the one that they found in the Mediterranean Sea? The Antikythera device?
Yes.
It's got like, it's basically an
yeah.
ancient computer. And I think it had all, I mean, obviously whoever built it, it was not just a sextant, but it was able to calculate, you know, stars. It was able
it
to
seems to be the ultimate sailing device.
Right.
What they built. I mean,
yeah,
like that like, right there, so you could go anywhere you needed to go.
Very advanced.
Yes.
And there's no argument that the thing was made to do that. So to sit here and say that everybody older than 12,000 years ago were complete idiot hunter-gatherers is ridiculous.
It's crazy, yeah.
And I think like you've brought up many times on the show, is there probably was advanced cultures surviving simultaneously as very crude and indigenous.
Just tribal culture.
Tribal culture,
yeah.
Right? Just like there is now. Like,
yep.
What's the island off the coast of?
Well, think about the pygmies in the Congo that Justin Wren's been helping.
Right.
How they live compared to how we're living right now.
What's the ones off the coast of like Sri Lanka a couple years ago?
Oh, remember the ones that you nobody can visit. They killed that
one
dude.
They tried to go there and spread the gospel and they shot them full of arrows.
Yeah.
But like those people are still living like it's the
yes.
Stone Age. But at the exact same time, you know, we're recording on a device with iPads and MacBook
yeah.
Pros and stuff at
it's
the
crazy.
Exact same time. Right.
It's crazy.
So why couldn't that have happened back then?
I think it did.
I think
100% think it did. I think it happened more back then than it does now, just because simply the information didn't travel as fast as it does now.
God knows what was in the library, Alexandria.
Oh, dude, that's one of the things that bums me out the most. Here's another one of my favorites. I'm going to toss that out there. We've done stuff and talked about it, and I know it's one of your favorites. From 1898, my friend, the Kensington Runestone.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
How great is that? Now, I know a lot of people have been down on it, and they're like, it's not real. Those people only scratch the surface. If you go and really look into it, now what they've linked with all the writing and the stuff that was written on it, they realize that when they thought that it was a hoax, what it really did was just prove that it wasn't, because that writing was unheard of until recently, because they had to trace it all the way back to, like, I think Rosicrucian writing and some of the runes that was actually on that stone. I would like to have a copy of it. Like a, you know what I mean? Like somebody to make one that looked just like it, just a big replica of the Kensington Runestone.
That would be a good idea. That'd like be replicas. Neat, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of different runestones, though. I mean, the Kensington was probably the most popular. Isn't that the one where the farmer found it when he was cutting wood?
Yeah, in Minnesota. Him and his kids found it. Yeah, they flipped it over.
There's like the Heavener Runestone up in Oklahoma, the Spirit Pond Stone. There's
a bunch of them. DARPA stones.
Yeah,
don't forget about those. And of course, I did the Bet Spear. That's another one of those things that's got left behind. We don't know what that is. Like, we try to figure it out. We've uncovered some things about it, but we're still not 100% sure about all the things on there. And that's just the odd stuff. That's not even the stuff that we're talking about that's like crazy cursed artifacts that have been left behind and passed on through people. I've covered a whole bunch of that. I found one I think you're going to like. I had not even really heard of this. I need to show you this picture because this is unsettling. Look at that painting.
What is that?
That right there is known as the Anguished Man. That's the name of the painting.
And that's a cursed item?
Well, it's like a cursed item. Yeah, it is. So something that went on to the fact that this person, Sean Robinson, I guess his grandmother, this is all in North England, said his grandmother was the current owner of this painting. I don't know where it all came from, but like a family friend gave it to Miss Robinson. The minute she got it, she already knew something was off about it. Now, the grandson owns it now, but when I say something's off about it, there's a lot of stuff been written about this thing. And I believe that Sean actually has videos of it. But it is said that at night, that painting will groan, will scream, and you can hear the fabric of the canvas being torn. Then you come in there and there's nothing going on.
Wow.
Yeah. So another strange that we don't know where it came from. And see, I like to kind of believe along those lines too. I like the idea that there might be something wacky like that still out there, right?
Me too.
Not just like alien or not just like ancient civilization artifacts, but something, all right, this is going to sound ridiculous, but something like the Aleister Crowley idea of like he could curse this item and then this item was given to someone. And then after that, someone died, the item was still cursed, but people didn't know. Now it's been passed along, right?
Right.
Just like it is some kind of madness, craziness along that way. There's tons of it. There are tons of these things. And there's a lot of them has to do with paintings. And I believe I covered the one whenever the kids were in the house fire or whatever that was going on there. Like I said, there's tons of these things, of these artifacts that make no sense.
Do you remember the story we had sent to us where a listener, they were trying to update their home? And his wife had went out to like Canton or somewhere and found this old farm door, like a barn off a ranch house or something. He bought the door. It was old, real old, like 100 years old. They installed it in their house. And then all of a sudden they started having all this poltergeist activity.
I do remember that.
It was like the old door was cursed but haunted.
Like there was energy stuck in the door.
Yeah. And once they got rid of the door, it all stopped. And it just makes you wonder.
How many things you can bring into your
paintings
house.
Or whatever, tea kettle, doesn't matter.
You don't know where it comes from.
What is like, why does the energy cling to that item? Like, I think my bows are always cursed. That's what I think.
My dice are. 110,000% my dice are. Have you heard of this? This is the fairy flag of Dunvegan.
I have never heard of this. The fairy flag.
The fairy flag. So I know you're a fan of the television show Highlander, the movie Highlander with the Clan MacLeod from Scotland, right?
Yeah, you can only stop by decapitating them.
Well, this just so happens to be the Scottish Clan MacLeod that had this fairy flag. For generations, this flag has been carried. They say it was carried into battle by King Harold of Norway when he had moved in to conquer Britain in 1066. All right.
Mm-hmm.
As he's when he's killed, this and the fairy flag is a little square of silk. All right. Now, as the story, this is family lore. As the story is told, the fourth chief of the clan fell in love with a princess who turned out to be a fairy princess from the Fae realm. Right.
Okay.
So she was forbidden, of course, to marry a mortal man. So it starts making you think about Tolkien. She's going to have to give up her immortality, whatever. But anyway, so her father eventually said, you know what? I know you're in love with him. I know this whole thing. You go stay a year with him. During that time, she gives birth to a baby boy. So when it comes time for her to leave, she tells, you know, the prince here or whatnot, the fourth chief or whatnot, when she gets ready to bounce, she said, hey, look, I'm going to make a promise that he would never let the baby cry because she would always be able to hear it in the fairy realm. So you know, that's what it is. You got to take care of the baby. Babies will be babies, right? That's the way this whole thing works out. Screaming, crying babies. They didn't make it. The whole thing, she comes back to visit the baby. And while she's there coming back, so I guess she had to leave the baby because it's half human, half fae.
Fae, yeah. Yeah.
She brings this blanket, and this blanket turns out to be this flag. So the tradition is that this flag protects the MacLeod family, that it contains magic that will protect their entire family. So you start going down and looking in there. Here, listen to this, though. It'll only work three times. So it's truly like a D&D item. So they say in 1490, you got to be attuned to it. They say in 1490, the flag was carried into battle by the MacLeods against the MacDonalds. And that, of course, they won. And then again, apparently they fought the MacDonalds again. So the MacDonalds and the MacLeods, they don't get along. So they fought again in like the 1500s and they won. And then the story says that during World War II, soldiers that were of that family were said to have carried a picture of the flag with them when they went into war. I guess, of course, probably because they couldn't do it. But during the wartime and all this stuff, they took the flag to Dover. So the troops, that, you know, when they invaded and all this stuff, would end up getting to it. And I believe it's still there. And it is a tattered old flag, but it's got this one piece, this one square sewn into it. And it's funny to me, not funny, haha, it's funny, amusing, that they would put, like, what kind of folklore surrounds it? Who are you going to get to believe if you just sewed a handkerchief in there?
Yeah,
but it's not. It's like this is, it's almost fully believed in, and it does have some strange stuff that goes to it. It doesn't make sense.
But don't you think that sometimes, like, if it doesn't matter what it is or what the item is, you could almost give an object power, though.
And
if
I believe
people,
so. Yeah.
Especially a large group of people, believe that it has power, it almost kind of does. It's almost as if you wish it into existence, right?
Well, I believe that because it's just like having, what am I trying to say? When you take the medicine and it's not real medicine.
Oh, like a placebo?
The placebo. You almost build your own placebo. Think about all I use this all the time, like, because baseball players are the most superstitious athletes I've ever met in my life.
Sure.
Any of them. They almost give certain things power from their belief into it.
Yeah, that's
if
what I'm saying.
If I do this. So again, maybe you're onto something.
Like
maybe
the fairy flag. I mean, like if you look at the flag of your nation, whether you're from Ireland and the Irish flag or America, you look at American flag, it's just a piece of cloth with different colors, right?
Yeah.
But it's so revered that you, when you do something, say you're going to a bow shoot and you got that American patch, you almost feel like it gives you some kind of power.
It's nothing but material, but you do feel something that way.
Yeah, people
it
have
is strange.
Charms, stuff that they would carry into battle with them. People would take something that was, this was my grandmother's earrings. And it's like that object has power.
Yeah.
It's not any different. It's just silver.
It's true. Isn't that crazy?
It's like you wish it into existence.
Which is also what we've talked about when people start bringing up the things of these different humanoids and whatnot. Maybe that the belief has driven
the
them
fear,
into it. Yeah, has driven them into existence.
It's forced it, right? Like a tulpa. You've created it.
I know I'm not going to pronounce this right, so I'm sure people will let me know. The Broider Gold Boat. Have you seen this?
I have not.
So this was discovered in Ireland back in the 1800s. It's 7 inches long. It's 4 inches wide. It is a golden boat with miniature oars, okay? Some believe that this was actually a fae boat.
Oh, that's a cool thing. Or maybe it was just some really rich kid's toy.
Yeah,
right?
But solid gold with all the little oars, all the little seats, everything that's on this crazy boat. Check it out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
See, it's a crazy little gold boat. Folks, pull up the Broider gold boat if you want to. Like I said, people believe that it was carrying Faye across a lake. And then, of course, you know, they found that this whole thing and this deal. But
it's funny because it could be just a toy. Because, like, I'm thinking when I was a little kid, my grandmother used to go.
But it wouldn't be a toy of gold. It would probably be something more of a display that they had put up, or maybe it was like a
something. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember, solid gold.
Do you remember? I know it wasn't made of gold, but do you remember when you were kids, you could go to like the tractor shops around here, and every Christmas you could buy like the toys?
Yeah, the metal, like, the cast, right. Die cast tractors.
So,
yeah.
Like after an apocalypse, years from now, somebody finds that. They're like, look, there must have been a phase tractor.
Yeah. Drove a Tonka truck. Yeah. Well, the Tonka trucks were beast. How many kids got stitches from their first Tonka truck when they? Because now I think they're plastic.
Yeah, now they're plastic.
And they used to be metal. You'd throw them up and smack you. And didn't you hit your brother in the back of the head with one?
Yeah,
sure. One of y'all's got stitches from it. I don't remember which one, but I've got to tell you a story. This is one of my favorite stories. Now we've covered with the Faye, where we've talked about like people reported seeing that one in the plane. Then we've talked about people finding like little baskets, and we've talked about people finding a little pipe.
Yes.
Right? Like little bitty things. So you got to think back in 1835, this is in Southwest Ireland. Okay. There's a farmhand out there working, checking on the sheep, checking on everything back in the day, living out in the middle of nowhere, right? In the Barra Peninsula or on the Barra Peninsula. So apparently there's a lot of sheep out in this area. So the sheepman out there doing his thing, walking along, checking on it, and he's walking this trail. Now, you do remember, I'm going to stop right here real quick. We told the story about them finding, wasn't it Mike Clellan, when he came on talking about the owls?
Yes.
Remember he talked about them finding those little footprints on the trail right after somebody had walked, they saw something run across the trail, yes. Right? This is a lot like that. So this sheep herder is walking up this trail, and he notices something on the side of the trail, kind of setting off on a little stone or whatnot there, and said, oh, my goodness, it's a cobbler. It looked like a guy sitting there working on a shoe. He's like, what's that? So as he approaches, the cobbler notices this person coming.
And it's Daniel Day-Lewis.
And it's Daniel Day-Lewis. And notices this, and the cobbler takes off into the grass. That's when the person realizes, wait a minute. They're sitting like a full-size person, and they get up there and they find a shoe. There's been a shoe that cobbler was working on that they dropped. This cobbler dropped and ran off. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The shoe, this is what throws everything a little crazy. So the herder was like, what in the hell is this? Picks it up in his hand. The shoe is 3 inches long and it's narrow. Looks like he had been sitting there working on that shoe like something was going on. So the dude, the sheep herder guy, he's like, I don't know what to do with this thing. This is crazy. So they take it to what he considers the smartest person in the village, a doctor. So he goes to the doctor. He hands it to him. He's like, look, what is this thing going on? So the doctor checks out. He's like, I don't know. So they preserve it, okay?
Yeah.
Hang on to it. So there's a lecturer and an author named Dr. Edith Somerville. She takes the shoe with her, and they go take it to the United States when she goes on a big tour doing some speakings. So in one of her lecture tours, it just so happens they've booked her at Harvard. So she brings it to have it looked at by Harvard scientists, if you will. Here's where it gets really wild. They get all their equipment out. This is back in the early 1900s, start looking at this thing. What they have found out is that shoe was made from mouse leather.
What?
And not only is it a perfect little shoe, it has eyelet holes, but there's no laces. So it's missing the laces that's down through there. So everybody's like, oh, this is cool. Somebody handmade shoes for their doll. And that's what it was. No big deal. Until they went to really looking at the bottom of it, and then it threw it all out. Because the heels had been worn on the edges where it looked like people would walk on them, just like shoes do for a long period of time.
Right.
They also say that they were extra small handmade stitches along the back of the heel, like you would as you were doing like Oxford's Not Brogues or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That showing that not only had it been handmade, but that the fact that it had been repaired by hand, something tiny. And they said, judging by the size of the shoe and the thread itself, humans could not have, not only could not have made it at that time, they couldn't even repair it. They didn't have small enough needles that your fingers could hold and get thread through and do all that, and that the style of the shoe was completely a mystery. They said the style of the shoe that that little thing was based upon was over 100 years out of date or more on that whole thing.
That's crazy. So is this like a time slip?
Well, what they're saying,
a wrinkle in time, you know?
They're saying that the if they, they went off the measurements of your foot and your body size the way everybody else, because there's a really easy way of taking like people's foot size, and you can almost tell how tall they're going to be. Just kind of like, you know, there's a lot of, and it's not perfect, but you know, you can get really, really close. They're saying that the, that whatever wore this shoe was probably no taller than 14 inches.
That's insane.
That's it. And the fact that it was worn is another thing. Now, of course, there are a lot of other theories to this. That
sure,
it was,
sure,
again, just somebody showing off their skill. Like if you're going to be a cobbler and you could do something like that, imagine showing that to somebody to get you a job, right? Like, hey, look, I've made that. You let me make a full-size shoe, no problem. So there's a lot of stuff. And of course, you know, the conjecture back when it was actually found, things along those lines. But the idea of that being a tiny little shoe left by the Fae is unbelievable, right? Now, there's a lot of other stuff written about it. Like I said, you can go on different things. Some believe that that person that was the cobbler was actually a leprechaun working on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that it was actually built. There's a lot of other stuff on there, like I said, you can go through it. But that's the long and the short of it, is they have found this mysterious little shoe. And as far as I know, the same family still owns it. It's all still in that whole thing, probably hidden away somewhere. But I don't know if it's ever been truly decided upon as if, is it a doll shoe or is it a 14-inch tall Fae wanderer shoe?
It's still a cool story.
But it's still one of my favorite things. So out of all the out-of-place things, I start with the Piri Reis map, and then I like the shoe. I like this crazy little shoe of the Bear Peninsula.
That's awesome.
Let's take a quick break, folks. I got another thing, crazy part for you for the outro, and then we'll get done. We'll holler at y'all on the backside. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Crazy Fae, right? And also it makes you wonder, how many things have we walked past?
Yeah,
how many things have we not seen, if it is Fae related, that we just, they're too tiny.
Yeah.
We'd never find them.
I like the idea of it, though. Even I hope that it's real, right? Because
that's
I
me.
Like the idea. It's cool.
That's me.
I love leprechauns. I love stories of Dwendy and stuff.
All of it, right? Anything that's Fae related is something that I have to go, I don't know. I just get into. Let me hit you with this one. From the last, from the Elite Show, we had talked about a little bit of maybe a Wendigo.
Uh-huh.
Listen to this. This is a Navajo skinwalker encounter. It says, this happened to me when I was 14 years old. I haven't told anyone about this because we aren't supposed to talk about skinwalkers in my culture. If you talk about this, they gain an attraction towards you and will focus on you according to our beliefs. I'm a Navajo man from Arizona, and I was raised on the res. I somewhat know what they are and know about them. We take them very seriously. If one is seen, and the Navajo police will come out and investigate the area, and I saw one. My family and I live in Arizona, and we occasionally visit family near Farmington, New Mexico. We left early to get there by noon. It's a very long and boring trip there, and we get there before noon. We have time to hang out and talk with all of our extended family. Now the younger kids and the teens, they all start playing and exploring and just running around being kids until dark. Now, the house is too small for everyone to hang out and sleep in, so some of the kids have to sleep in the trailer and truck camper, and my cousins and I stayed in the old, slightly torn tent, which just sounds fun. You're camping with your cousins.
Yeah,
right.
Sounds like a ball.
So it's nighttime, about 9 o'clock at night. All of us are getting ready for bed. It had been a long day, and we're all exhausted. So we're all asleep at this point, and for some unknown reason, I wake up. And of course, I'm still tired, rubbing my eyes and yawning, meaning I wasn't aware of my surroundings. So once I finish rubbing my eyes, I look at the entrance of the tent, and I see a figure illuminated by the backlight porch. Standing in front of the tent, just the outline. So at first, I was scared, but I thought it was my cousins messing with us. As I was thinking this, I thought, why would they go to this much trouble of staying up late to have the off chance of us waking up and seeing them? As this person was still standing outside our tent looking at us, I turned to one of my older cousins to wake him up and tell him that someone was standing outside. He tries to brush me off, but I persist, and he turns to me and asks what I wanted. I tell him to look at the entrance of the tent, so he does. I've never seen someone go from the brink of sleep to sheer panic that fast before or since. He looks at me with a shocked face and tells me to be quiet. He whispers to me that it's a skinwalker and that we need to be very quiet. We lay there for the longest time, and from my memory, it was at least an hour or more. Now, we were just about to go back to sleep because it hadn't done anything. Then it started to walk around the tent at a pace insanely slow that it kept us up. Now remember, when I said this was an old tent, it had some holes in it, and one of the holes is about the size of a quarter. So I decided to be brave. As it continues to walk around the tent the fourth time, I slowly crawl towards the hole to try to take a look. As I did this exact movement, my cousin told me to get back to bed or it'll hurt us. So I just ignore this warning. I'm at the quarter size hole, and I'm looking out to see whatever I can see, seeing if I can tell what it is. It comes around to the hole, and what I saw was bone chilling. I was looking at its lower half and not its face. What I saw were darkened, dirt-covered legs and some kind of makeshift animal pelt. I bolt back and I hide under my sleeping bag while my cousins did the same. This thing decided to stop moving and start looking at us again, as if it knew that I saw it and it was letting me know. It continues to stand still again at the entrance and watch us. I hide under the covers, curled up under the sleeping bag, so scared that I believed that I was in shock, and I finally fell asleep from sheer exhaustion. I woke up early, maybe about 5 a.m, and I decided to look outside the tent to see if there was anything there. I see footprints, bare footprints that send shivers throughout my body. I saw the footprints move around the tent. This hit me hard because I was now realizing it wasn't a dream. As I further investigate the footprints, I noticed that it went off toward the rocky hills nearby where we were staying. I followed the track to the hills about 100 yards away from the house. As I continue to follow these tracks, something strange and frightening happens. It goes from 2 footprints walking for a while to footprints and handprints in the dirt. Found that kind of strange because no person would do that out here. As I followed the tracks further in the hills, the prints started to get smaller and smaller. This is when I started to get scared again. It slowly changed into coyote paw prints. That's when I stopped and turned back, first walking fast, and then I break into a sprint. When I get to the house, I sat down on the back porch for a while and thought about telling my family. But I didn't think they'd believe me, and in the end, I didn't tell anyone. Even the cousin I woke up in the middle of the night. It seemed too outlandish and sounded like what a kid would tell to try and get attention. That's my story. My people take witchcraft very seriously and do our best to not talk about them. Even though I broke this code, I've refrained from saying anything out loud. I have had a few other incidents, but this is by far the scariest of my life. H.
Wow.
A damn skinwalker.
Yeah, outside it sounds there. Like it, right?
Again, you always bring up the fact of the old story that Fritz had told me, you know, and told us and all that. Again, this skinwalker's walking and transforms into a coyote.
Yeah.
That is unnerving.
And it makes you, you know, why are there so many stories like that?
Yeah.
In the, you know, indigenous culture that they have these stories all up and down from, you know, South America all the way up into Canada. Like there's just these stories. They all believe it.
And it's all, it all basically holds the exact same thing.
You know, and of course, you know, Westerners, when they first arrived, they, you know, these people, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, they got silly traditions. It's not possibly real. But what if it is real? What if they can do what they claim. And there are these witch doctors that can shape shift and put curses on people. And I don't know. I mean, like we always talk about, if you remember, the original Wolfman movie was called Curse of the Werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
There's two things that I will always believe the locals about. If that part over there is dangerous, and where's the good place to eat?
Yeah.
That's the two things you want to always listen to them about. Like when they tell you there's monsters out there, believe it. And when they tell you that's a good place to eat, believe it.
Yeah.
That's the way you got to go. But yeah, it's unnerving. It's extremely unnerving. Let's hope 2023 is a good year for paranormal sightings and high strangeness.
I hope so. And if you have an experience and you want to share it with me and Kim and the listeners, please do not hesitate. Please don't ask if we want them sent in. We do. Send us your story. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can also call the show 888-393-2783. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsor. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. All you need is just one scoop of in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. Right now, we're going to make it easy. Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/expanded. That's athleticgreens.com/expanded. Cam, what do you have planned for your weekend?
I have to go to my niece's baby shower.
Oh.
It's actually, we're going to go over there. They're doing one of the ones where it's like, you know, joint baby shower with the guys and the gals and all. We're having a big cookout and all that stuff. So,
ooh,
yeah.
It's, I like cookouts.
It's Lou's. Lou's fixing, because she gives birth in February. Yeah, so I'm fixing to have another one.
Stop doing all the CrossFitting while you're, I mean, just like relax.
No. She doesn't ever relax. That's right. What is she, 31 weeks in? Is she still going on the row? She doesn't move like she used to, but she's still got her kettlebells and her rowing machine and all that. Yeah, she CrossFits like crazy.
I know. Makes me feel bad because I
makes
don't.
Makes me feel real bad. Yeah, dude, be around her. Yeah, dude, it's that way. I can still kick her butt. That's always good. I've got her that way.
Right?
Unless she took off, then I can't catch her.
I am going to be doing some work, unfortunately, over the weekend, but not the whole time. And then the rest of the time, I'm going to be standing in the backyard. I'm actually going to be probably playing with my new bow.
Yeah, I figure we'll shoot this weekend.
Next weekend, I got to get some practice in.
Same. It's going to be embarrassing when I'm walking around behind the targets, every other one picking up sticks.
Yeah, right.
That's pretty embarrassing stuff. Other than that, though, that's all I got planned, man.
But that sounds...
Living it up. My daughter comes home. I get to see her some this week.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yep. Because when she goes back, I don't know how long it'll be. You know, they get busy now. So it may be a month or two before I see her again.
That sounds like fun. Well, I hope everybody out there has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam. Peace, y'all.